Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch or get two extra exclusive podcasts a month, then please consider becoming a patron and joining us at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Hello everybody and welcome to Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Popture Podcast. My name is AJ and I'm joined as usual by my best friend and life partner, Richard. And today Hello. We've got two very... Hey, Richard. Today we've got two very special guests joining us. We've got Charlie Dudley and Carlisle Laurent. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Did I pronounce your names correctly?
Hello.
This is really weird because me and Carlisle are also best friends and life partners, so this has just worked out tremendously well.
And also, I didn't think I was that special, but you said that we were very special guests today, and now I feel quite special.
Yeah. I was hoping you would say, like, one special guest and one not-so-special guest.
And then we just have to guess who.
And never tell them which is which.
You started this with so much more gusto than I usually start podcasts with, and it took all my strength not to woo when you said, welcome to the comp. I was like, yeah, come on.
Because when you're listening at home, that's what you normally do.
Yeah.
So you guys, we'll give you a plug at the end of the show, but just in case people are like, who the hell are these guys? You guys host kind of like a plethora of podcasts, don't you?
Yeah, we're two white guys in our mid-20s, so we each have
what
three
a coincidence
podcasts.
So you guys host a podcast for everyone together, which is your Busted podcast that Richard's been on.
Yes, we get
Busted
Richard
being
on for
the band
most...
you talk about and not the quality of the show itself.
We get Richard on for the sexiest songs because he is the sexiest person that we know, so
that is always our reasoning. We're like, who's coming on this one? I don't know if we can find anyone sexy enough for this one, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm like the only guest that actually likes the band as well. So
yeah, you are literally the only person we've had on that is remotely
when ranking all the songs, I throw off the stats quite a lot.
I mean, to be fair, you throw them more on track with what we were put, because every other guest we have on, at the end of every episode, we rank a Busted song, and then me and Charlie go, yeah, this is like a 9 out of 10, and then our guest comes on and goes, this is like a 3 out of 10, so we sort of go down the average of that.
And so, Charlie, you also host Why Did I Do That?
That is correct. It's a show where I get people on and make them tell embarrassing stories, and then we all laugh at them, and it's very nice, and it's not mean. No matter what anyone says, I'm not a cyberbully.
It's good. I really like the concept. I love the title. It's a good title for a podcast as well. And there's also Dungan and Dragnose. Which one of you does that?
I do Dungans and Dragnose. Yeah, me and my two idiot friends get together and we homebrew things to use in Dungeons and Dragons, but kind of, I'd say the premise, not really the premise, but just a sad fact of the fact that we're not very prepared, is that none of us know anything about Dungeons and Dragons, so it's mostly just us talking out of our asses for an hour, and then it goes online.
Very nice. And you also host a show called Content, presumably.
Yes. I have a show called Content, presumably, and that's basically the whole description for that show. I just do whatever
Excellent.
I want
well,
every month.
Have I missed anything else? Is there anything else people should might maybe know you from? Or is that
Carlisle's got a he's a little Spotify artist.
I'm a musician as well. Yeah, I'm on Spotify. And Charlie is also a staple in a show called The Rank List of Everything now, which is on hiatus, but I'm sure we'll be coming back at some point.
Where do you have all this time to do these podcasts?
We can barely manage
to
that kind of helps. I have a job that finishes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which also helps. And other than that, I just sit in my bed. So it's nice to just talk to people, you know? I would say get out the house, but it's not out the house. I open the window, so it's like I'm outside the house.
How does that affect the sound quality? stunned silence as a four-way Google Hangouts missed the message.
Yeah, this is an unprecedented episode for us. So this is the first time, the second time we've had four people on. You might remember the first time was when we had my parents. And we did actually plan to have two guests making four total another time for our Nutty Professor episode. Watching like two of the films and keeping in contact with the guys we were supposed to have on, they just never spoke to me again. So that's why, like, throughout the last 2 weeks, I've been like chasing you guys. I've been like, "Hey, you're still watching the movies? Still keen to do this?
We wouldn't miss this for the world." You were talking about time, and I've had to put two of my podcasts on hiatus because I've been writing my dissertation recently, and people...
You have a dissertation? I handed it in yesterday.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. But I was talking to people like, make sure you take breaks because, you know, you're getting frazzled and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'll take a break because I've got to watch Spy Kids. Like, when you say you got to watch Spy Kids, I need to watch all four Spy Kids movies. It's an obligation that I have made.
I had that. I moved to help my girlfriend move into her second year uni house like yesterday, and I was sat around.
Oh, you were supposed to. And
no,
and you said,
I did
can't,
that.
Darling. Spy Kids 3.
But we were sat around her table, and she's an English student, so I was like, "Oh, after this," we were with a housemate. And I was like, "After this, do you need to like do some reading?" And she was like, "Yeah, that's pretty good." And I was like, "Oh, that's great because I need to watch Spy Kids 2." And her housemate just looked at me like, "What is wrong with you?" I was like, "No. No, it's okay. I'm for a reason. I'm not just watching Spy Kids for no reason, like a loser."
Yeah, I have had a new flatmate move in the last couple of days, and she watched some of Spy Kids 4 with me, and I didn't tell her I have a podcast. I guess she just thought I just sometimes watch movies that I'm clearly not enjoying. I'm getting ahead of myself. So yes, this is Film Franchise Fortnights, where we talk about a different film franchise every fortnight. And this fortnight, from our Patreon vote, was it our Patreon? It was our Patreon vote. Yeah, it was. We are talking about the Spy Kids franchise, which is a series of four films, all of which were directed by Robert Rodriguez. And they came out in 2001, 2002, 2003, and I know what you're thinking, 2011. And they follow the surreal, wacky adventures of a pair of siblings by the names of Carmen Elizabeth Juanita Costa Brava Cortez and her brother Junie Rocket Racer Rebel Cortez, which are Robert Rodriguez's kids' names.
Yeah, Robert.
He has a kid named Racer and one called Rocket. Yes, one called Rocket.
Oh,
Rebel's not that weird.
I just thought that was a weird joke.
Yeah, and then also in Spy Kids 3, the like arena is called Rebel Rockets.
Yeah,
he loves his kids.
So these siblings, they're thrust into the world of top secret government missions after discovering their parents used to be spies. Rodriguez himself has described at least the first film as James Bond meets Willy Wonka, which is probably something that applies to the whole series, I think. I think that's a good
one. Especially the first one with Floop.
The first one came out in 2001, as I said, and as I also said, it's directed by Robert Rodriguez. Who wants to guess what this is ranked on Rotten Tomatoes? What's its score on Rotten Tomatoes?
Ugh.
68%. Okay. I'm going high.
That's
I'm going
high.
40.
Wow. Richard?
93%.
It's 93%, which shocks the world.
Fuck, that's insane. So I've said on the podcast.
I thought you were setting up a joke.
No, man.
It's 93%.
Carlisle, I would never set up a joke about Rotten Tomato scores. It's sacred.
I've often said on the podcast before that I quite like Robert Rodriguez, and I'd like him to have a win because him and Tarantino are like quite good mates. They feel like two sides of the same coin kind of thing. And I'm always like, you know, he hasn't had that like one big hit like Tarantino's had throughout his career. But the first Spy Kids is rated higher on Rotten Tomatoes than anything Tarantino's done.
Seriously.
Tarantino has two films. I think Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Basterds are at 92%.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever seen a different Robert Rodriguez movie, so I was quite surprised to hear you say that he and Tarantino are like two sides of the same coin, because point in any of these four movies did I watch this and go, this quite reminds me of Django Unchained.
that's really interesting, because there are two types of Robert Rodriguez films. There's the Spy Kids type film, and then there's the Tarantino type Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, like the B movie kind of tribute. Because, I mean, well, they did Grindhouse together.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right. So, which one are you strapping young gentlemen want to tell me what Spy Kids 1 is about?
I guess we should take one each, eh?
Yeah.
Carl, did you want to take the first one?
Sure, I'll do the first one. So, Spy Kids, the first film in the Spy Kids quadrology, is about this pair of spies who meet when they're on a mission to, I believe, assassinate each other, but instead fall in love, eventually get together and have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on a mission long after they've had kids to try and track down some missing agents and important people who, it turns out, a host of a children's television show called Floopy has been transforming into bizarre, terrifying children's characters on his show.
Floops Fooglies.
Yeah, Floops Fooglies.
So that's been happening. So the parents get kidnapped by this mad children's entertainer. The kids have to go and rescue them and save all these people who've been transformed into horrifying children's characters, and also prevent this same character making robots out of all of the important peoples in the world's children so that they will be replaced by these robots so they can topple world governments.
Very good. That's what the first film is. It's a fucking weird movie.
Very, very strange.
So this film was nominated for Best Fantasy Film of the 28th Saturn Awards, but it lost to The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, which, like, you know when you're nominated appalling. In the same category that you're probably going to lose to The Fellowship of the Ring. So a year later, we got...
I'd rather watch this than The Fellowship of the Ring. Oh, I'm just going to put that out there.
100%.
What do you mean, actually, 100%? Do you know what? Whatever. This is a terrible sample size.
Speaking of percents, it actually, Spy Kids has a higher percentage than Fellowship of the Ring.
Good. Deserved.
All right. So in 2002, a year later, we got Spy Kids 2, The Island of Lost Dreams, once again directed by Robert Rodriguez. And what does this have on Rotten Tomatoes? Any guesses?
81.
I was going to say about 80%, if it's probably not as high as the first Spy Kids, but apparently the first Spy Kids is insanely high. So,
yeah. 67.
It's got 75%. On Rotten Tomatoes. So a little bit, you know, that's about as low as a movie can be before you stop calling it a good movie. In my opinion, 75% on Rotten Tomatoes is like, all right, I'll go see it in cinemas. Just kidding, I'll see anything in cinemas. Even except for Hellboy. I discovered Hellboy was my threshold when it got 11%.
I watched that.
And I was like,
it was real bad.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so who wants to tell me what Spy Kids 2, The Island of Lost Dreams is about?
Charlie, you take this one?
So, Junie and Carmen are now top agents in the OSS, the best spy agency in the world, where all their spies are definitely secret, and they definitely don't just tell everyone they're secret agents the second they meet them.
Yeah.
Anyway, they then have to go to a amusement park and save the president's daughter, who becomes the first, like, spy kid girl.
Yeah, sure.
Which is real weird that is a thing that just happens to all of these films.
Yeah.
And then they get sent on a mission. Oh, no, sorry. Junie gets framed and is no longer the best spy in the agency and has to leave the agency.
Mm.
So Gary Giggles and Gertie Giggles, who are other spy kids, get sent on this amazing mission. It's like the best mission ever. And then the Cortezes sneak their way onto the mission, and they go to this island where it's cloaked by a weird device that stops all electricity, so they can't use any of their gadgets.
Oh,
but gadgets
no.
makes this agent. An agent's only as good as his gadgets. That's the line they use. But maybe they're not. Maybe they need to use their brains. Wow. Anyway, then the Giggles turn up, and they have a little fight, Anyway, I'm really doing this badly. I'm not as good as Scott.
What's strange about the island? That's the main thing I'm looking for here.
Oh, yes. There's lots of genetically mutated animals, such as spider monkeys, which is a monkey's head, or like torso, on a spider's body.
Yeah.
And
flying
bullfrogs.
Pigs. Yeah, exactly.
Flying pigs, all fun stuff like that, which Steve Buscemi made for some reason, which is never explained, but who cares? Mm. So then they have to stop the bad guy, who's also the head of the OSS, getting the device, which is going to stop all the electricity in the world.
Missed that
part. Why does he? Yeah, why does he want that? Who knows? Mm. And then it all works out in the end. Gertie turns on her brother and her dad, and helps
she
them
turns
save
them
the day.
On. Oh my god! What kind
That's
of movie's
movie
is that?
That's racier than I thought it was going to be.
You know what I mean?
She betrays
and
them.
Then Junie at the end decides to just retire from the OSS after they save the world again and go and live with the president's daughter, I guess. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what happens.
They also do ballet.
So, yeah. Despite the fact that this film uses over twice the amount of special effects as the first film, Rodriguez did not ask producers for a larger budget. He said, I told the studio I don't want more money, I just want to be more creative. And Rodriguez picked some visual effects companies who are eager and less established, as well as starting up Troublemaker Studios, which is the little logo you see at the start of every film. And he also got someone named Ray Harryhausen to work on the computer Ray Harryhausen has a cameo in the film, and he was an old visual effects artist who worked on Jason and the Argonauts from 1963, and so there was a intention to have all the creatures in the movie look kind of like those old school stop motion from the 60s, and I think that's really cool, because my personal go-to example when I think of old-timey stop motion monsters is the skeletons with the swords from Jason and the Argonauts, which is very clearly referenced in Spy Kids 2, The Island of the Lost Dreams, when the same thing happens. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
It's stuff like that. That's why I quite like Robert Rodriguez. He's got a real good book called Rebel Without a Crew, which is about the making of his first movie, El Mariachi. And I read a broadcasting school and wrote about it in one of my final essays. It's real interesting about making a film with fuck all. The budget was it was $6,000, and he spent $5,900 of that just on the film reels.
Jesus.
Yeah. So a year later, we got Spy Kids 3D, Game Over, in 2003. Also directed by Robert Rodriguez. Who wants to take a stab at the Rotten Tomatoes?
I'll take this one and then age
Hold
it.
On. Oh, oh, Rob, oh, fucking oh,
sorry,
hell.
Sorry.
The podcast is derailed.
41.
41? I feel like an auctioneer. 41. Can I get it higher than 41? Am I going to put up for 41?
37.
Richard?
45.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Richard, what is Spy Kids 3D Game Over about?
Okay, so Junie is now retired from the OSS, and he's cool film noir guy.
He's a private investigator.
Private investigator, that's the word.
Or cool film noir guy, as the profession is technically called.
Can I just say, that bit was my favorite bit of the whole quadrilogy.
And so he's contacted by the president, George Clooney, mm-hmm. who tells him that he needs to go into this video game. He tells him that his sister's missing because she went into a video game on a mission.
Like a virtual reality.
Yeah, which is created by the toy maker Sylvester Stallone. And so Junie goes into the game, and his sister's on level 4, and he has to catch up to her, and then they have to take on level 5, which is unbeatable.
Yeah.
And then they take on the toy maker, who is Sylvester Stallone, as I've mentioned, and he talks to alternate versions of himself, which is really weird to see Sylvester Stallone do character work.
Yes.
Because one's a hippie and one's a drill sergeant. But then eventually they win or whatever, but then they get out of the game, but the game follows them out into the real world, And there's my favorite part of the Crawl trilogy, which is when it's revealed that George Clooney is actually Sylvester Stallone, and he, like, you see him kind of transform into him, which is just, which happens by George Clooney doing a Sylvester Stallone impression, which then overlaps with Stallone doing it, and it's great. And then there's the bloopers when Clooney does that bit, and then it's like, this is the end of my fucking career.
Yeah, he says fucking in the credits, in the blooper reel during the credits of a PG movie. So the one thing I think you missed there is that the toy maker's game is designed to trap people in it, and I can't remember why, but that's why.
And also,
it's to take over
3D.
Their minds or something.
Yeah.
So he has the children's minds, and he's got the next generation of, I don't know, it's real weird.
Yeah. He's like, as soon as you've got their minds, I don't know what he wanted to do with them.
Yeah, the Cortez's granddad is like, trapped the toy maker in there. In the game or something.
Yeah. So prior to this film's release, it was originally announced that this would be the last Spy Kids movie, as the young actors, and in particular Alexa Vega, who plays Carmen, were growing out of the role, which is something... it is interesting how quick they cranked out a trilogy. Probably because of that, because kids... And you, like, Junie in particular doesn't... He matures, but he doesn't look... Like, it still makes sense to call him a spy kid by the end of the third movie, you know?
Yeah. But then there's, like, weird moments in the third one where it seems like you're supposed to find Carmen hot.
Yeah. Like, all three of them.
The three of us
all
are, like...
All three of the sort of auxiliary characters that show up in that film that helped Junie on his quest at the end, they're all like, hey, Carmen, here are all of our email addresses.
The best line is when Junie's love interest gets booted out of the game, and he goes, I never even got her email address. It's a good line. All right, so 7 years later? No. 8 years later? How much? Yeah.
Eight.
We got the like long-awaited revival. Everyone was clamoring for it. We got Spy Kids All the Time in the World in 2011, inexplicably also directed by the same guy who directed the last three. And what do we reckon this is on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, like 4.
Yeah, like, I'm going to say 14.
22%. So,
no, that's
I was
wrong.
Gonna say
I
20.
Disagree.
So I'm gonna call myself the winner there.
Wow. Interesting. I'm the only one who said the correct number though, so maybe I'm the winner.
Second place, Silver's still good.
I guess I'll take this. This one is about a like the bad guys. There's a whole bunch of new Spy Kids, and the bad guys the big evil plan is that time is slowing down. No, time is speeding up, which seems arbitrary because time is a human invention, you know? Like, they're like, you need to do this by Friday, and it's already Thursday, and but it was Monday 2 hours ago, and it's like, yeah, but you can control what you deem to be the day of the week.
You can just not call the times those things.
Yeah. Because the way that time is shown speeding up is not just through the sun going up and down really fast, but also clock hands speeding up real fast. So again, they're human inventions. Anyway, the new characters are the stepchildren of Jessica Alba, who was a spy but gave it up when she gave birth to her new husband's child, and there's a whole plot about how she has trouble connecting with the kids, and then they find out she's a spy, and so they all team up to try and stop TikTok, which feels especially relevant today because the amount of TikToks that my Zoomer sister sends me really gave this film new light, because all I could imagine was like, we've got to stop TikTok, and I was like, hell yeah, bring back Vine.
100% of Rotten Tomatoes, I'm giving this 100% of Rotten Tomatoes. Finally someone is taking the big guns to TikTok.
The Spy Kids initiative has been shut down, but Junie and Carmen do show up, now spy adults. And it turns out that the bad guy is once again the like leader of the OSS, who's played by Jeremy Piven, and his plan is like that he was frozen in time as a child in the 30s from his dad, who created this time displacement device, and he wants to go back in time. We'll talk about the ending later.
I actually quite liked his backstory. It was quite interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
So much.
I wasn't expecting to get feels in Spy Kids 4, but I did.
All the feels in the world.
His story was interesting. I didn't really understand how it informed his plan.
This will
plan
all be
makes no sense.
Yeah. No. I agree with you, Carlisle. So yeah, this much in the way we didn't really mention this, but Spy Kids 3D Game Over was a 3D film back before like the new invention of 3D movies. So you wore like the red and green glasses,
red and blue
glasses. That
fucking
like
hell.
Spy Kids 3D was the first movie in my lifetime I remember being 3D. Like 3D wasn't a thing, and then Spy Kids 3D came out, and then 6 years later we got Avatar.
Like 3D wasn't, it didn't even exist in the real world. Yeah. You weren't familiar with the concept of a Z-axis until you saw this movie.
Exactly. So much in the way that Spy Kids 3 was 3D, Spy Kids 4 boasted 4D. That, in fact, one of its titles is Spy Kids 4D. That being what they call a romoscope, which was that you got like a scratch and sniff card when you saw it in the cinema, and you'd scratch the number that would pop up on the screen, because that's the thing missing from the cinematic experience. All right, so guys, had any of you seen these films before, and if so, what was your enduring memory of them before rewatching them?
I'd seen 1, 2, and 3,
yeah,
but I've seen 3 about 8 times, probably more. It's one of those films that just is always on TV at Christmas for some reason, so I just always watched it.
What a choice.
But I have no idea why. So I'd seen all of them, but I couldn't remember. Like, I remembered like the Fooglies, and I remembered the weird animals on the island from the first two.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember anything else. But the third one, I was just kind of like, I know what's going on here. And the fourth one, I didn't even know existed until you were like, we're going to watch the Spy Kids films, all 4 of them. Yeah. And I was like, what? Yeah. Okay.
I'd only ever seen the third one because that was just one of the DVDs we had when I was a very young child.
Wow.
So I'd watched it over and over again as a child. But there's so much in the beginning that only makes sense if you've seen the previous two Spy Kids movies. So upon watching the first two Spy Kids movies for this podcast, it was like, oh!
Yeah, there's a lot of continuity that they do keep quite front and center in these films, which is surprising considering that they're kids' movies. Richard?
I went to see the first, second, and third in the cinema.
Wow.
And hadn't seen them since, and I didn't see the fourth one. But it was weird, like, yeah, these films I haven't seen in, you know, close to 20 years. Mm. And and just like how much I kind of still remembered from them, whereas like I remember like fuck all from RoboCop 3, which we watched like last week.
Yeah,
Your
brain is
and
a sponge at that time, isn't it?
And I tried to watch the fourth one in a romoscope, but I couldn't find the cards because apparently if you buy the like a edition of the Blu-ray, it comes with 4 of the romoscope cards, and I was grabbing lunch with a friend at work, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go into JB Hi-Fi, which for you guys is like a CD store, CD and DVD store,
right?
And I was like, I'm just gonna pop to JB Hi-Fi, you head back. And he was like, oh, what are you getting? And I was like, I don't
cool
say.
Films.
and then I was like, later on as I was leaving, I was like, I'm gonna see if they have Spy Kids 4 in a romoscope. And he was like, yeah, I can see why you didn't want to tell me that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't
it's
find
so weird
it.
To talk about the aromascope thing, because like in Spy Kids 3D, there is so much places where it's really obvious that they were, you know, going for the fact that it's a 3D movie where loads of stuff is coming right at you from the screen.
It's literally every shot.
Yeah.
It was so annoying.
But there's nothing stood out to me during Spy Kids 4D is a bit where I would scratch a scratch and sniff.
Really?
It was when the baby farts.
The only thing that I can think of from Spy Kids 4 that jumped to my mind when I think of things that could have smelt would be the plethora of fart and poop jokes in the film, or when Jessica Alba's water breaks. And I'm like, surely that's not one of the
those are all things that I do not want a scratch and sniff card for. I'm happy
pranks.
For that sense to remain unexplored while I'm watching this movie.
This is me presuming that someone's water break smells like anything. I don't know.
Do you guys want to know what the actual smell, the 8 smells are?
I do have
yes, please.
Two possible You tell me what they are and I'll delete.
What are your two possible?
So I found one that was like from the Spy Kids wiki, but then I found a review of the smells and they were completely different.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, because I'm looking at the review of the smells.
Is that the Vulture one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Do you want to read them out?
So it says, first one is bacon, which is when at the start they're like tugging over a piece of bacon. According to this review, doesn't smell like anything. The second one, Jessica Alba has a bag full of blue cheese poured over her head.
Oh, yeah.
That also smells like nothing. And then numbers 3, 4, and 5 are all supposed to smell like different types of candy.
Right, because there's that big Pick-a-Mix bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then number 6 is supposed to be poop, baby poop.
Great.
Nice.
They said it smells like chocolate. And then the number 7 is supposed to smell like dog farts, but apparently smell like vomit. And then number 8
I wonder if that means that there was people, you know, putting these cars together and, you know, they've done that one and someone went, no, that smells too much like a human fart. No, that's a cat fart. You gotta go back to the blackboard. You gotta get this dog essence here to come through here. People are gonna roast us on Vulture if they don't think this smells enough like a dog fart.
And the last one is supposed to smell like boogers, which is like, do they even smell like anything?
Smell. Because yeah. It's just what a nose smells like.
They're constantly in your nose and you don't notice.
Yeah. So what does the Spy Kids wiki say?
The Spy Kids wiki says that the flavors, or the smells, are bacon, grape, cherry, cinnamon, with a question mark, bubblegum, chocolate.
when did they come up?
With an exclamation mark. I don't know, man. Dog fart. And then the most perplexing of all, victory, is apparently what the last smell is.
That's awesome. I love that. If that's...
It's really saying something if you can say a bunch of foods and then dog fart and then go the most perplexing of all.
but on the Vulture website, those smells were actually reviewed by Chandler Burr, who's an artificial smell expert. And one of the things it says on this review is like, yo, these aren't hard smells to make, and yet somehow these are like, these screw
up
really badly.
How does become an artificial smell expert?
No, like, knowing very little.
Like, everyone knows what victory smells like. Come on, guys, this one's easy. Yeah.
You can trust me, I'm the artificial smell expert.
In terms of my enduring memories from, because I'd seen the first three back when I was a kid. I never saw the fourth one, much like you guys. And I remember not wanting to go see the original film in cinemas because I didn't find the concept of kids being spies very interesting. I was like, so, whatever. And then I think I caught it on a VHS later on. And I was so enchanted by it. And I never, like, it's so colorful and like exciting and interesting. And I guess I never saw any of them in cinemas. I remember I feel like I watched all these movies in like my cousin's bedroom with fish and chips and a glass of Coke while my parents and my uncles and aunties watched like the adult movie in the lounge. Not the adult movie, but the movie for grown-ups.
Weird group thing to do. Fair enough.
Yeah. So guys, how would you rank each of these films? Which was your favorite and why? Let's on from my perspective, Carlisle, you were first on the Google Hangouts chart that I've got here. So you can tell me what it is. What your ranking is.
Okay. 4 is solidly at the bottom
for me.
Thoroughly the least entertaining, or at least the most upsetting, because a lot of my notes for it, three of my notes are all just shut the fuck up, this character in particular, just because they were so annoying to me. Mm-hmm. The best, I think, was Spy Kids 2, because I think it sort of struck that balance between being thoroughly insane but also a lot of fun to watch. Like, you're invested in what's going on, even though halfway through, for absolutely no reason, there's a haunted hidden treasure subplot that just happens, and then it's over, and by the end of it the kids have gained the ability of telepathy,
which carries over into the third film.
Yeah
that's right.
And but, the fourth one
is it
so that's yeah. just something
I'm pretty sure
that happens. And but yeah, there's also a bunch of genetically engineered weird creatures all over the place. Steve Buscemi plays a really weird thing. I didn't realize that this film, Spy Kids 2, was the origin of the quote, "Do you do you think that God too doesn't come down because he lives in fear of what he's created? I always thought it would be from a much more profound movie than Spy Kids 2. So I was falling out of my chair laughing when I realized that this is what that is from.
There was a Reddit thread on Our Movies this week that was based about, they were like, it was like, what line of dialogue is too good for its movie? And that was the example they used.
Yeah.
Then for me it probably goes Spy Kids 2, 1, 3, 4.
Cool.
From best to worst.
And overall, would you say you liked, or you know, the ones did you like two, or was it just your favorite out of, you know, if you have to pick one?
No, I definitely enjoyed 1, 2, and 3. I'd watch them again. I think I'd say Spy Kids 4 is probably the only one I didn't enjoy, and that really is only for the, maybe the first half. I think in the second half it becomes more fun to watch. But I'm not very tempted to watch it again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Charlie?
Mine goes 1, 2, 3, 4. I thought the first one was genuine. I was surprised at how good it was. I thought it was going to be awful. I thought I was like, I'm going to have to slog through all of these. But I actually had so much fun watching it.
Yeah.
I was just laughing the whole time. It was great. Four was just weird because it was so different. Like, the first three are just insane. And then the fourth is just like, oh, we're just in like this normal house.
Mm.
And then we're just going, I don't know, the four was more grounded.
Yeah,
and it just made it so much more boring.
Yeah.
And three was
more tough. Grounded one is the one where time is speeding up.
Look, you know what I mean.
I'm
just saying that's how insane the first three films
are. Exactly. Nice.
I'd say I liked the first two. The third one was all right, but there were bits of it. I think it might be because I've seen it so many times.
Right.
That was kind of like, oh, yeah, I know what
it's
happened.
It's not
there.
Because you've seen it so many times. Okay. Richard, what? How do you rate the films?
Okay, so I would say... I was pretty clearly 1, 2, 3, 4, or even like 1, 3, 2, 4. But Carla, you really sold me on 2.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, like for me, it's the first three are kind of equal in like a weird way, where like the first one's actually just a pretty good family film, and then like the second one improves in some areas and then it goes down in some areas, and then the third one is just so like ridiculous and stupid that I quite like it. But then then also the fact that it's only like 65 minutes.
Really?
Makes it real easy. I think it's like 70 minutes. It's so easy to watch. But then obviously 4 is just not as good. Sorry, Rob, you didn't do it.
See, I'm going to buck the trend somewhat with my ranking. I would rank them 2, 1, 4, 3. And I'll go through this individually before getting ahead of myself. So I really enjoyed the first two. The second one especially I thought was such a creative and interesting film. Like, it got to the part with the Argonaut skeletons, or even the part before that where they're in the temple and they can't speak, but they can read each other's mind. And I was like, this is so interesting. This is so creative and weird, and there's not really a point to it, but it kind of just feels like these simple ideas that Rodriguez was interested in, and he's like, yeah, maybe this happens. And it feels like there's a lot of love gone into them, I think. And in a weird way, those first two films feel like simultaneously almost like the quintessential kids blockbuster, and yet somehow they're like the only films of their kind as well, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they tick so many boxes for what I think a great like school holiday movie should be. And yet the only other movie I can think of that even feels vaguely similar to the Spy Kids films is Shark Boy and Lava Girl, which is the spiritual successor to the Spy Kids films. Roger Ebert had this to say about the first film, which I thought kind of echoed what we've all said. He says, movies like Spy Kids are so rare. Families are often reduced to attending scatological dumber and dumbest movies like Sea Spot Run, which I'm sure was a sick burn in 2001. movies that teach vulgarity as a value. Spy Kids is an intelligent, upbeat, happy movie that is not about the comedy of embarrassment, that does not have anybody rolling around in dog poop. They would rather find out what it can accomplish than what it can get away with. That's poetry.
That's really
what can Spike
that really made me laugh.
Yeah.
because in the second film, the villains literally fall into a giant pile of camel shit, and it gets in their mouth, and it really pulls it in. So I imagine this reviewer was not pleased with the second
film. No, and he died a few years after the fourth one, and I'm not going to say it's because his words were so clearly thrown back in his face.
The last film he ever reviewed was The Host, based on the Stephanie Meyer.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the movie so bad it killed Roger Ebert.
Wow, there you go. But I love that line, it would rather find out what it can accomplish than what it can get away with, which is such a cool way to look at it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. So I really enjoyed the chemistry between Daryl Sabara and Alexa Vega. I think her name is Alexa Penn Vega now or something.
Yeah, you're right.
They played...
And also Daryl Sabara is married to Meghan Trainor now.
Really? Yeah. Actually, you really want to destroy your image of Spy Kids, go check out the movie World's Greatest Dad.
Yeah. Or he's in the Halloween, isn't he?
Is he? I don't remember.
And he like beats up
the
Rob
Spy
Zombie
Kids
one.
4, am I right, fellas?
And World's Greatest Dad, he plays a masturbation addicted little shit. And he's the son of Robin Williams. And I'm going to spoil the film for you, but it's what makes the film interesting, so I have to spoil. It's like maybe a bit before the middle of the film. He accidentally kills himself through autoerotic asphyxiation. And the movie is Robin Williams trying to hide it. And it's a very interesting film.
Yeah, it's
what the
cool.
fuck?
And Daryl Sabara, the makeup department must like go in between takes and dampen his cheeks because he's constantly sweating throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it's the plot of the film, even though it doesn't happen until like halfway through. But because Robin Williams is a failing writer. And he, because he wants to hide the fact that his son killed himself while jerking off, he like writes a suicide note that ends up like getting published because it was so beautifully written. And they were like, oh, Daryl Sabara's like this, he was this beautiful tortured spirit then, and none of us knew. And so, you know, he can't come clean and say, I wrote it, but he wants the credit for it.
It's a very cool, directed by Bobcat Goldthwait. Very, very interesting
hilarious.
Film. It's a very interesting film. And not to stay too much on it, because I have a movie club on Facebook, which you should all join, AJ's Movie Club. Look it up on Facebook. And we did World's Greatest Dad about a year ago, and the people were writing like their comments about the film, and everyone was real conflicted because some of the film is this really cool, dark idea, and then some of it's real weird. And there's a part where Robin Williams is talking to his neighbor and he quotes Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
When talking to his neighbor, and we talked about it in the comments, they were like, why is it so fucking weird? That is it because Simon Pegg's like a contemporary figure? You know, he's not like some old philosopher.
Well, because he's quoting like a piece of IMDb trivia.
Yeah, essentially. It doesn't feel like a line of dialogue in a film. It sounds like something you'd say to your friend. Yeah.
That was because I watched the film a few years earlier than that, and I didn't rewatch it for AJ's Dumb Movie Club. But that was the one line that stuck out to me and stuck with me for like 3 or 4 years. But you guys should watch it. It's a real interesting film.
I'm going to now. Just try and stop me.
And now as well, because it's all Robin Williams going on TV and saying about how suicide isn't the answer and all this stuff.
So one of the other things I liked about the first Spy Kids film was the subplot that Junie has warts on his fingers that he's covering up, and I was like, what a great little character struggle that so many kids will watch this film and like relate to.
What a great little character.
I was right, waiting for a break in AJ's text to say that.
Very nice. Okay, so
I just realized I did a bunch of clicking finger guns for Charlie's joke, which people listening to this will have no idea why I did that.
Yeah, AJ can
add
that's
in like why a pew, 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 pew.
I do want to, before we move on, I do want to focus on the chemistry between Journey and Carmen, because like you said, you like the chemistry is real weird between the two of them. So the second film is like Junie getting real jealous that someone wants to fuck his sister.
Don't say and- fuck. They're little kids, you freak. Someone's got a crush
on
her.
That doesn't mean they don't want to fuck.
Yeah, like 14-year-old boys want to fuck more than anyone. but like, yeah, the fact that someone wants to like get with his sister, and Junie's like weirdly jealous about it. There's a lot of sexual tension between the siblings. Like, honestly, it's like keep it throughout the entire film. That's Junie's like subplot in the second one, is being jealous of his sister, like other men giving his sister attention. And then in the fourth film, there's a real weird moment. I was watching that with Jess, and I kept on talking about all these, pointing out the weird moments where like Junie and Karma would have like real weird chemistry. And then there's the bit in the fourth one when the new Spy Kids meet Carmen first, and for some reason they see like video footage of like a slow motion montage set to very romantic music of all the times when like Junie and Carmen would like touch hands and all this stuff. And then they go, oh, like, who's that? You know, as if like this must be a long lost love or something like that. And she goes, oh, it's my brother. They're like, oh, okay. And then the way they interact is very like, you know how like they always say, oh, when you like someone, you tease them, or like when you're being teased, yeah, like they just like you. That's their whole interaction in the fourth film, is like wiping boogers on each other and all this. Like, they're very strange.
That's what brother and sister do
in the fourth film. Yeah, like that's maybe. That could be an indication that they fancied each other if they were younger. If you're an adult and you're wiping boogers on each other, then you're probably siblings. I get what you're saying with the fourth one, with that montage.
Yeah.
That's not how I read the situation in the second one, because I didn't read it as Junie's jealousy. I read it as Junie being aware that this person that Carmen is sort of, you know, flirting with is a huge dick. And Junie just sort of being aware of that and not approving.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I have in my notes, Gary Giggles is the biggest prick in cinematic history.
All right, so I thought that the third film was so bad. I thought this film fucking sucked. And if you had told me that Spy Kids 3 was a dramatic step down in quality from the first two, I'd be like, what do you mean? Like, it's not a hard standard. It's not a particularly high standard to reach. And I couldn't imagine how hard, like, it'd be hard to replicate, you know, the same quality. But it's like, in my opinion, it's almost like Rodriguez went out of his way to make the film bad. Like, it looks like shit. The whole thing
oh, yeah,
is filmed in a green screen when the technology was nowhere near good enough to facilitate what they're trying to show.
And then they reference it like as if to make it okay. He like gets and knocks on the floor and it's like, low res. I'm like,
I scoured the internet looking for answers to. Carmen is barely in the film. It's all, yeah, Junie's story, and then none of, like, the parents aren't in it, and you know, a bunch of the characters aren't in it until the like final scene, except for Grandpa. Grandpa, for some reason, was the character that were like, yep, he's gonna be the buddy to Junie in this film, and so Grandpa has a huge role in it. I googled, like, why did Alexa Vega have scheduling conflicts and all this sort of thing to try and find, yeah, out why she was, because I was like, there's got to be a reason for it. It's surely it's not a creative decision to just not have her in much of the film. I couldn't find anything.
The grandpa's not even in it that much. He just turns up every now and again with a fucking butterfly on his hand, yeah, and it's just like, here you go, Junie, here's some, yeah, help. And then just goes away again. He's just not there, yeah, anymore.
It does really feel like there was some sort of weird backroom deal where the grandpa was like, you know what? I feel like I'm not being utilized and I have a very high idea of myself. So unless you make me basically the main character and cut out one of the kids almost entirely, I refuse to come back for Spy Kids 3.
Yeah.
And for some reason they were like, no, we can't lose grandpa. So they did.
Well, they needed him for the amazing ending, for the original, yeah, Avengers Endgame ending.
That was my continue to the franchise. It's just someone, please re-edit the ending of Spy Kids 3 to have the Portals theme, because everyone shows up and it's like this incredible thing, and they throw glasses on them so that they can see them, the robot. Oh my god, it's so
fucking
good.
Show me the cracked glass.
So I'm glad that we're talking about the ending of Spy Kids 3D Game Over, because this has got to be one of the worst third acts I've ever seen in a film, like comparative to the rest of the film and its predecessors, right? Like, it, first of all, again, the whole film, or a lot of the film, is filmed on green screen, including the third act where they're not in the video game anymore.
Yeah.
Actors who are very clearly not in the same room as each other run out into the street, which is, there's no one walking around. There's no, you know, there's no one, like, there's no bystanders or anything. It's just a completely empty street, and there's, like, no spatial awareness. You don't know how far away the giant robots are from the characters. And, like, there's this one part where one of the giant robots picks up Carmen, and it opens its mouth to eat her, and then she quickly calls Gary Giggles, and it cuts away, and he gets a call, and he's like, I need your help, and he's like, I'm there. And then it cuts back to Carmen, and he arrives, and the robot's mouth is still open, slowly going into, meaning that either it's been doing that for, you know, the bare minimum of however long it took Gary Giggles to get there, or he got there instantaneously. It's just a complete mess. It's,
yeah.
The best bit of that is when Grandpa, they're like leaving the game, and Grandpa's like, I want to stay. And then Junior, he's like, oh, I can like run, I can jump, I can use my legs again, I haven't felt this good in ages. And he's just like, please don't stay, Grandpa. Oh yeah, right, you make a good point. I'll leave the game. Even though he wants to leave the game anyway, because he wants to go and confront the toy maker. Yeah. So what's he doing? He just wants
a lot of questions of that variety in these movies, Charlie. Like, why is he doing that? Doesn't he want this?
We all disagree with your ranking, because we've all put four at the bottom, but none of us can disagree with a single word that you said about why should be the first one.
And like one of you guys mentioned before, how like the start of the film where Junie as a private investigator is actually really cool, and I thought there was a cool place to begin the character. They begin in an unfamiliar place, and it starts, and he's like, I'm no longer a spy, now I'm a private investigator, and I was like, oh cool. And even like there's even something compelling about Carmen being not in the beginning of the movie. Like, it vaguely reminded me of Luke Skywalker in The Force Awakens. Like, it's this legacy character that you talk about, and it builds up, and you're like, when are we gonna see? But I think because it's such a short movie, it doesn't work. If this had been a, you know, heaven forbid this was a serialized TV show, like, it would be kind of cool if, like, Spy Kids season 3 started and Carmen's not in the first couple episodes, and you're like, oh man, where is she? What's going on? Like, that would be cool.
I'd absolutely watch a series of Judy as a PI.
The beginning of Spy Kids 3 gave me false hope for the rest of it, because I remembered this film where I was like, it's pretty bad. And then it gets to the start, and he's in the water park talking to that guy, and he's like, I know where all your water's gone. It's winter. They closed the park. And I was like, yes, I'm in. This is incredible. And then the rest, it just as soon as he stops doing a voiceover, the film just drops, and I was so disappointed. Yeah.
No, agreed. It is, I thought, like, again, I was like, how is this so much worse than the first two films? It feels like an impossible feat to actively make a film of such an achievable quality worse. I don't understand. It's so bad.
Are you ready for my hilarious Spy Kids 3?
Tell me.
Oh my god, fuck yes.
Are you ready? Okay. This film was shit. Tacky Mushrooms.
Ah.
Thank you.
If you haven't watched the film, that's Carmen's recurring joke. Even in number four for some reason.
Yeah. When she's old enough to swear.
Yeah, you're so full of shiitake mushrooms.
That would be great if for realism reasons they just had to go, oh, fuck!
Yeah, didn't that blow your mind when you were a kid? And you're like, oh my gosh, shiitake mushrooms? That was how I found out what shiitake mushrooms were.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Austin Powers 2 when he's talking to the Japanese guy in the business like the building and all the subtitles are cut off by like books and stuff and they move them out of the way.
Our second franchise to make a joke about shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah. or if in the fourth one she was like, holy fucking shiitake mushrooms.
So
you can't get mad. I was talking about produce.
on the topic of the fourth film, this is one of those like baffling legacy sequels, right? That it joins the ranks of Cats and Dogs 2, The Revenge of Kitty Galore, or the Johnny English sequels, where it's like, who was asking for this? But unlike those two examples, there is actually a reason for why the series was revived. Robert Rodriguez was apparently prompted to make the film by an incident on the set of the Machete films, when Jessica Alba, who's in the Machete films, and her then one-year-old baby, the baby's name is Anna Marie, was dressed to appear on camera, and then her baby's diaper exploded. And Rodriguez says, watching Alba change the diaper while trying not to get on any of her clothes prompted Rodriguez to think, what about Spy Mum? What about Spy Mum?
They already had Spy Mum.
They already
did.
That was
put on those sick glasses. It said Spy Mama. We're all invested.
Yeah. No, look, I didn't loathe All the Time in the World as much as I loathed 3D, but it is still such a load of horse shit.
Oh yeah,
like the ending. You guys, let's talk about the ending, because you guys said you liked it before. It just like, it goes on, and people keep talking and people keep saying things, and I feel like I misinterpreted it, because the bad guy wants to go back in time so that he can spend more time with his dad, right? And he's tried over and over again, and that's why there's all these like time replicated clones of him, because he's failed and come back to the present and had to help his current self achieve this goal over and over again. And then at the end he does get back and he hugs his dad, and then he returns to the big battlefield, and he's an old man now, and he's like, you know what, you're right, after all that time I tried to get back to my dad and he still died.
Yeah.
Dad from dying?
Yeah.
What are you talking? I thought it was to spend more time with him. You just think he's not going to die? Like, he comes back as an old man, which means he went back in time, spent as much of his dad's life with him as he had left, and then comes back and is like, you know what, kids? You're right. It was a folly. It was, you know, it was a fool's
despite
errand.
The fact that I mastered time travel, my dad was still mortal.
Damn, so close. Plan?
I thought they were going to go for some insane twist in this, because Jeremy Piven is like the head of the OSS, and then he's also clearly TikTok, but then there's a guy in a mask, and I was like, okay, so those two are clearly the same person. Who's the guy in the mask? And I thought Junie was going to come back.
I also thought it would be Junie, yeah. Which would have been
sick. And I was like,
sick.
This is going to be sick. This is going to be like an insane twist. And then he just comes back and he's like, oh, I'm just normal. I'm just Junie.
We're just doing the same character reveal twice. Like, do we need to talk about Ricky Gervais in Spy Kids 4?
Well, I think having guests, we have to.
Yeah.
It's really fucking annoying.
So, who does Ricky
Gervais... God, I hated Ricky Gervais.
Who does he play in the film, Carlisle?
He plays a dog called Argonaut, and literally, he's a robot dog, basically, and he's been made to protect... He's been assigned to protect... The new generation of Spy Kids, Jessica Alba's two stepchildren. Mm-hmm. And God, he's irritating. And I don't even necessarily hate Ricky Gervais, but God, just in this, he is so off-putting to look at, his character, the dog, with Ricky Gervais's voice coming out of him. And all of his jokes are about being a dog, which, you know what, fine. That's a tried and tested format for jokes in a kid's movie. If you've got a talking animal, they should make jokes about being the animal, but not every 4 fucking seconds. Just shut the fuck up, Ricky Gervais's dog at Argonaut.
Yeah.
God, it really, really pissed me off.
My 4 notes for this film are just Ricky Gervais's shit, and I hate this.
Did Ricky Gervais's like his, I guess, social currency stock, did it go down when he was able to show that his infectious laugh he can just do as an actor? You know, because I remember when An Idiot Abroad came out, and he was like, "Oh, Ricky's laugh is so funny in it," and then in this he does his laugh, and it's like, so it's, I don't know. There's something disheartening to know that he can just do it.
Did you have to stop watching it for a second? Just be like, he lied to me.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it feels like you're hearing something not supposed to.
This actor lied to me. I bet he's not even a dog.
Yeah, you watch this film, and with Ricky Gervais, you can't tell whether, like, Ricky Gervais was just a weird choice for the, like, vibe of a Spy Kids film, or if the shtick that is Ricky Gervais is not as timeless as they thought it was going to be in 2000.
Yeah. The bit that annoyed me the most is just that he just would talk when it was so unnecessary. Like, Jessica Alba would be talking to the two kids, and then the dog would be in the background just being like, yes, I agree. Woof, yeah. Woof. Yeah, I'm a dog. Like, shut the fuck up. No one cares.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, at the best of times, I feel that the Spy Kids series is a bunch of dumb fun. There's a bunch of silly jokes and visually really intriguing ideas and concepts. And at its worst, it feels like it was written by some guy you hired off Fiverr because you really needed to just finish the script. You really needed to crank it out. And there's so much, like in all four films, I'm not letting the first two get away, the dialogue in the climaxes is so drawn out. And even the second one, and like Cheech from Cheech and Chong, like, betrays them at the end of the second one, and you're like, what the, aren't you like a good, like, I would never...
Uncle Felix!
Yeah, I don't need Uncle Felix to switch sides. It's not the character's point, you know? And, like, they all stand in these green screens and talk to each other for a bit, and it's just, it feels like... Props to Robert Rodriguez, because he must be such a mule to be able to actually write all of that. Like, if I got into that, if I was writing these films and I got into that many pages of dialogue at the climax, I'd be like, fuck, I'm giving up. This is too much information
maybe
I need to
convey. The most double-bladed compliment I've ever heard. God, I really admire your work ethic, how you could just keep putting out shit.
Yeah. Well, no, because like, you get it with like soap opera writers or like any writers for anything that's not like prestige content, right, is like they are hired because they are good at writing, but the misconception there is that everything they write is gonna be like really good quality, and it's like, no, they can just have the endurance. Yeah. It's an endurance game.
You have to admire though, like, on all of these films he composed the soundtrack, and he was like the VFX supervisor, and he I think was the camera operator for a couple of them, and he like wrote and directed all of them, and like that's
it's
what
a
I
labor
like
of love.
Rodriguez is that he like he does everything.
Yeah, no, totally.
The man lives to make films.
Yeah, and I mean, he churned these out one year after the other, and then went and made Sin City, I think was his next film. And then, and the films
that's
he made
really
either
weird.
Side of Spy Kids 4 were Machete and Machete Kills.
So,
which I only know a little bit about the Machete films, but I do know that just the idea that they're in the same universe as these films is hysterical.
Yeah.
Because they are just ridiculously violent. Yeah. And
actually, before I forget, AJ, while we're talking about the dialogue and the climax, I believe it's in the fourth one, but we spoke last week about...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Leave my friend Robocop alone. The fictional line from Robocop that I came up with. But then Spy Kids 4 pretty much has that line when she's like, what'd she say? Stay away from my Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, stay away from my kids. No. Spies. No. Spy Kids.
Spy. Oh, sorry, and stay away, like... guys. You're getting the line wrong. And stay away from my stepkids.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
The girl's like, "Make that your kids." And she's like, "Stay away from my kids, my spy kids." There you go.
It's so good. I stood up and cheered.
And
it
goes
like,
on for
the
a while.
Of that is
that
so...
was actually an. Like, that was an alternate take. If you see the blooper reel, at one point they turn around and go, "What are we? Some sort of spy kids?" And then that was what they went with originally.
The ending of Spy Kids 4 is so weird that they're like, we're starting up the new Spy Kids division. We need to activate all these kids. And they're just looking at like CCTV footage of like a playground, and they're just like making all these kids spy kids.
Yeah,
like,
I feel like
any training.
I feel like a better ending would be if they look directly into the camera and talk to you, like so you're a kid watching the film, and they're like, "Here's our next recruit."
They do at one point because they like they go you, and then they point directly at the camera. They go you, but then it pans back to the screen and you just activate some kid. So they kind of they try to do the best of both worlds, but in reality. That doesn't work. That is, it just sort of feels messy.
That is how a division run by kids would probably pick their recruits, though. They just randomly select children in them.
Like, see, that guy can do the monkey bars in three swings. We need him on our side.
So, did you guys... I know you did, Richard, but Charlie and Carlisle, did you guys stick around for the post-credit scenes?
No, I saw the second one. I didn't. So you guys talked about the George Clooney being like, "This is the end of my fucking career." That was news to me. I haven't seen that. I saw the second one, and the second one is fucking nuts.
The sound on my illegal rip cut out, so I had to read what.
Yeah, on all four of them. Yeah.
So the post-credit scenes are some of the most mysterious and enigmatic post-credit scenes I've ever seen. The first one's post-credit scene is just, it's the hallway where Junie meets the thumb people. What are they called? Thumbs?
Yeah. Thumbs.
Thumbs. In the first film, it's just that hallway and it just, the camera just moves through it. And Rowan, who had remembered it and was talking to me about it, he's one of the other guys on the Cop Popshire show, he was like, yeah, it's just silence. It's just a silent shot of a hallway. And then in the second one, it does the same thing with their tree hut. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you?
I was talking about the scene, the like talent show thing.
Well, that's
from Spy Kids.
There are three post credit scenes in Spy Kids 2.
Oh,
the MCU stole so much from Spy Kids that I didn't even realize.
I mean, they definitely stole the end of Spy Kids 3 because that. You know the bit in the Avengers Endgame where everyone shows up? They stole that from the end of Spy Kids 3. Because everyone in the Spy Kids franchise shows up at the end of Spy Kids 3.
And
gets
don't
a solo
do anything because he just shuts down the robot himself.
Yeah, they're just there.
All right, so...
Sorry, please carry
do
on.
Do you
with
guys,
post-credits.
Moving on now, do you guys have any favourite moments or things from the series you'd like to discuss, be they genuinely good or so bad they're good?
Yeah,
is there anything
I'd love
I've
to hear
out?
Some of your notes that you guys took.
I'd like to...
Sorry, you go,
Carla. As it's just come up, I'd just like to spend a little more time talking about that talent show scene.
Yeah.
Because what the hell? It comes out of just nowhere. There's no apparent tie to anything else in the entire franchise to it. What happens is Machete has supposedly made like these devices that can make Carmen sing and dance
just
like a pop
Machete's
star.
Their uncle. I don't think we've actually mentioned that, who's another spy. And this is the during the credits of Spy Kids 2.
Yeah. And they give Junie a guitar that will make him play like that will play like a copyright friendly version of Santana. He like puts four famous guitarists' names together and it puts it together. But at one point, he's genuinely just playing Santana licks.
Right.
At one point, he's straight up playing Smooth by Santana. So they're just playing this song, and there's a bit where Machete accidentally hits the Spanish version of the singing device, and Carmen starts singing in Spanish. He accidentally cranks up the dance thing, so she just goes fucking like insane with dancing, just super fast. I move every half
and
second.
It's important to note that the nothing else in the rest of the movie is about Carmen wanting to be a good singer. There's no mention of the talent show earlier
guitar.
In the film. This is a scene that just comes out of the blue. I presume Alexa Vega was going for a like singing career at the time.
Yeah, because it has like she does a song for the third one as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, called Game Over.
Yeah.
And yeah, so and it turns out in the end he didn't put batteries in their devices, so they were all, so it was a huge coincidence that she just started singing
going.
In Spanish and dancing faster. And turns out she's just really good at singing and dancing.
Yeah.
And Junie, despite having never played guitar, I mean, singing and dancing is one thing, there's an amount of just an inherent ability, but you have to practice with a guitar to just play
the
Santana.
The twist is supposed to be that she was actually a good singer and didn't need the machine, but that's ignoring the fact that when he accidentally switched to Spanish, she started. That's irrelevant to the like motivational message of them being good enough all along. Like, she just knew to start speaking in Spanish at the same time he pressed the button. I'm calling bullshit. He took the batteries out before he told them.
In the credits of Spy Kids 2 as well, there are some outtakes. And one thing, in the beginning of Spy Kids 2, there's an absolutely hilarious scene where Junie is basically trying to chat up the president's daughter. And he asks her to dance, and she says, "Well, I only know how to dance a ballet." And he says, "What a coincidence." And then he like jumps through the air and does a couple spins and then lands and goes,
"Very smooth."
So do I. And the outtakes show it was actually that actor that plays Junie doing that, which I was really impressed by.
Good old Daryl. Without saying Sabara after it seems a lot less like...
He becomes a worse actor in the fourth one than he is as a child in the first three.
Oh, he's so good in World's Greatest Dad, though, dude.
I was impressed by his... by some of the performances in the third one, like knowing that they're acting to nothing. Like there's a lot of good eyeline work, and which I guess is the directing and the effects as well. But yeah, there's some bits of Junie that I was like, yeah, I believe you're looking at the thing that you're supposed to be looking at.
Did you enjoy Elijah Wood's cameo?
Oh, that was great. I got so excited.
It's one of those cameos where it's only relevant to the plot if you know who Elijah Wood is.
You know,
if you have knowledge outside of the film of who the actor is. So for those who haven't seen it, he shows up as like a fake out ending because everyone thinks he's the real chosen one, and then he dies immediately. The guy, they call him. All right.
It's weird how they're in this game for like a month or however long, but they've suddenly developed like a rich religion that goes back to like the developers. The guy will come and save us all.
So,
one thing that was funny is you kept talking about how Spy Kids 3 is almost entirely green screen. And one thing I thought was really funny in the first film, and also in bits of the second, is that that Floopy, the guy that makes that children's television show, they show him filming it, and they green screen him into a green screen room. Yeah. And I feel like you could have cut out some of the variables. He could have just filmed the green screen he was using.
Yeah. Yeah. Floop, what do you guys think? I thought Floop was a pretty cool...
Oh, I love Floop. Cool.
It's
Cullen.
Weird how just none of the villains, there's just no repercussions. Like, even one
Minion
that works at the OSS works at the OSS in the third one.
Yeah, the head bad guy of Spy Kids 2 is just now a technician in the third one.
Oh, the best bit in the first one is when he's like, Minion? He's like, it's Mr. Minion now.
Tony Shalhoub. If we have time for a brief section of dumb IMDb trivia... when I was looking on for trivia for these films on IMDb, in the first one it says Tony Shalhoub plays Mr. Minion, a role which he did like a year before he played Monk.
Yeah,
it's like, who cares? All of these actors played roles after this film.
We should also do a segment called "Dumb Things That AJ Thought About the Movie."
I thought I've already shared, haven't I? Shared enough dumb things that I thought about the movies?
No, what did you message me the other night?
All right, this is a good conversation. All right, so you guys are familiar with like the concept of like meta-contextual casting? So like Michael Keaton...
No.
Michael.
And I thought you were going to say, are you familiar with the concept of messaging? But carry on.
Do you guys have that in the UK?
Michael Keaton plays Birdman in the movie Birdman, who's about like a washed up ex-superhero actor, which he is in real life, that sort of thing. And I messaged Richard and was like, is Floop the original meta-contextual casting?
No. What you said was, is casting Paul Rubens as a kids show host the original meta-contextual casting?
Yeah.
And I was like, why? And you're like, because he played Pee Wee Herman. And I was like, yeah. How is that meta-contextual? He played Pee Wee Herman. And he's like, nah, but he's in Spy Kids. I was like, do you think that Alan Cumming is Paul Rubens?
Which?
Because I'd woken up to go to the toilet or something like that, and I'd been asleep. So I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Because
I thought you were just like, Paul Rubens as Pee Wee Herman is the first example of meta-contextual casting.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know much about Paul Rubens before he was in Pee Wee
Herman. I don't even know much about Pee Wee Herman. It didn't play in New Zealand. No, like, like Paul, Alan Cumming and Paul Rubens look very similar, and I still feel like maybe Alan Cumming was cast in Spy Kids as Floop because he has the Pee Wee Herman look.
Right.
But I also the fact that you thought the first example of that was in 2001.
Yeah, yeah.
When like I'd say Sunset Boulevard is like one of the most classic examples of that, where the main woman is like a fading film star played by a fading film star, and that's like 1950.
Yeah, because the reason I bring up Floop is because I forgot to mention when we're talking about our enduring memories of the series, but one of the only things I remember from Spy Kids before rewatching it was Floop is a madman, help us, save us, Floop is a madman, help us, save us, which is the message that the mutated characters of Floop's Fooglies say, but it's in reverse. And I always
You're not the first person to say that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
People this week that I've been telling I've been watching Spy Kids have said, "Oh, all I remember is the
Floop is a mad
jingle."
Man. Yeah,
but the I love the Floop's dream sequence. The "You Can Dream My Dream."
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's a good song.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Hey, well, let's move on to talk about something that we talk about a lot on this podcast, which is titles. We talk about titles a lot on this podcast. And I don't necessarily have too much to say about the titles themselves. They're vaguely consistent. Like, I don't mind when the fourth film drops the numbering device, and whatever. I don't know. I don't have much to say about the titles themselves. But it is interesting that the first film is called Spy Kids because that's the name of the evil robots. Like, In the kid versions of the robot versions of these famous children, they're like, they're called Spy Kids, and that's why the first one's called Spy Kids. And then in the sequels, it's like, no, they're called Spy Kids because the kids are spies. And it reminds me of the Watchmen movie. The collective of the superheroes in Watchmen, the movie, are called Watchmen, whereas in the graphic novel, they're called something else. I can't remember what. I think they're called the Minutemen or something. No, that's the original ones. They're not called Watchmen in the graphic novel, and the words Watchmen refers to like a JFK quote.
That, yeah, I like that a lot as well, because Spy Kids, if you're talking about the kids, is kind of a misnomer, because at no point in any of the four films do they do any spying. At no point does a kid assume an alias or sort of go undercover and do anything as spying. They're really more of spy operatives, but I think that doesn't really roll off the tongue quite as well. Spy operatives,
Secret kids.
Yeah.
That should be called, kids. Don't tell your parents. Never tell your parents.
The fourth one is called All the Time in the World. Do you think that is a deliberate sort of allusion to, because there is a Bond song. The Bond song for On Her Majesty's Secret Service is called All the Time in the World as well.
Wikipedia certainly seems to think they're connected.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just thought I'd bring that up.
All right, well, let's move on now to one of our final segments of the show. This is Continue the Franchise. This is a segment where we all pitch our sequel continuation ideas. But before we do that, let's talk about the actual continuations of Spy Kids, because it is not without its, you know, ongoing legacy. The Spy Kids brand has been adapted into a couple of video games. There is also an animated Netflix series called Spy Kids Mission Critical, which currently has two seasons, and tentative plans for more in the future, but nothing as of yet.
Thank God.
Apparently, it follows Carmen and Junie in what looks like as an alternate canon as they attend a spy academy, which makes this like our third or fourth franchise we've done recently, which has a Netflix animated series or an animated series at all in development or something, you know, because Robocop had a couple of animated series. Fast and Furious has got one coming out. So there you go.
I hadn't even heard of it. Did they market it?
The underbelly of kid Netflix shows is huge, dude. There's so many Netflix shows aimed at kids that are like spin-offs of movies that you've never heard of. Well, you've heard of the movie, but you've never heard of the show. But in terms of movies, while there were once plans for a fifth film that would act as a direct sequel to All the Time in the World, it got ended up getting cancelled because the two main stars like each ended up landing a TV show each. So they weren't, they, and you know, they would grow up and they wouldn't have enough time to be on on in another movie, and now they are no longer children. But do not fear, because the Spy Kids franchise actually has its own spin-off series, as we mentioned before, in one of the strangest and most inappropriate, I want to say, spin-off series in film history. There are two R-rated machete movies, which we'll be covering next fortnight on the show. So those were part of the Grindhouse brand, which initially started with Death Proof and Planet Terror. And if we really want to get intense here and really want to get... you know, conspiracy, or as much as you can be, conspiracy theories about the subject of continuity, and fictional continuity at that. The Spy Kids and Machete movies, if they are connected, Machete is part of Grindhouse, which could also mean that Spy Kids, Machete, and the Tarantino universe, or at least the movies that exist as movies in the Tarantino universe, like Kill Bill or From Dusk Till Dawn, are all set in the same fictional universe within a fictional universe. So it's not necessarily that weird that Spy Kids has an R-rated spinoff, because it's an R-rated spinoff in the fictional Tarantino universe. And the one like factor we know about the Tarantino universe is that because Hitler was killed, the world was more accepting of violence. And so that's why it's just, yeah, have an R-rated spinoff.
Is that canon reason
not,
why?
Yeah, have you not heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was dumbed down in a movie theater that this world would, A, like, be more like accepting of violence, and B, like, place more importance on films.
Yeah, so there you go. So... And maybe
it is a fan theory, to be fair.
Maybe in the Tarantino universe, it's very normal for PG movies to have R-rated counterparts, because everyone loves R-rated movies. Take your kids to see Machete Kills. Because Hitler died in the movie theater. All right, so who wants to pitch their ideas for Spy Kids continuations? You guys are right over there?
Just kill
them. Well, that's I'll go first, because mine is real short and dumb.
Just like your co-host. I'm really short. Charlie and Carla, you might not know that. I'm a short man.
Yeah, AJ's like 5'2".
Yeah.
Just a Spy Kids 5, but they're all grown up, you know, follow them as adults, much like what the Lizzie McGuire revival promises to be. Mm. Let's see them dealing with, like, millennial problems, trying to find a job, trying to afford a house. So it's Junie and Carmen, obviously, but they're all grown up. And so now, but because they're grown up, instead of Spy Kids, it's called Adult Kids.
Oh, I was drinking when he did that. I nearly died.
Very good. All right. Carlisle, what have you got for us?
In Spy Kids 4, I think Adult Junie and Carmen are both a lot more fun to watch than the new Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Sequels, I do want to keep focus on Junie and Carmen, which obviously is a bit of a problem if you're trying to make Spy Kids. So I agree with Richard that you want to take away that part of the name. So Adult Kids maybe works, but I think the idea of the child element really works. And one thing we never get in the Spy Kids movies is a child supervillain.
Oh.
So one thing I'd really want to see is Adult Junie and Carmen dealing with a child supervillain.
That's a really good idea.
And it could be called, like, Villain Kids or something like that, or Evil Children or something weird.
Because you could even, like, have in the plot as well that they, like, they pull them back because, like, it's a rogue Spy Kid that's gone and done this, and then it's like, you guys started the Spy Kid program, you know it better than anyone.
Yeah.
What about if it's one of their kids?
Go beat the shit
they
out
have
of this
kids
kid
together.
Adult
Junior. Or Junior and Carmen finally gave in to their, like,
separate kids.
The sexual tension between Junie and Carmen finally got too much and they had a kid.
Yeah.
And it's because it's a weird, like, incest baby.
Did you message me? Was it you? Did you? Maybe I dreamed this. Did you message me this week, Richard, and say, God, when are Junie and Carmen going to fuck already?
Yeah, something, words to that effect.
So that,
I thought that about Steve Buscemi and his animals. I was like, he's definitely fucking these animals.
Oh, yeah, does he make a human with his little technology? You know, that's an animal. Why can't he do a human? Charlie, what's your continue the franchise?
So I think Spy Kids is best when it's really fucking weird. Mm. So my idea is a spin-off TV show following Carmen and Junie, but they're both kind of fucked up from a childhood of just being spies. Not like child actors just become like weird when they grow up because of all the pressure. But it's that, but then they're just in like a Rick and Morty style world where they have to save the world, but one of them's just like they're both just like Rick from Rick and Morty, and they're just horrible people, and they just kill anyone, and it's horrible, and it's really weird, and that's what I want.
And the whole thing's on green screen.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
But it's just shot. It's not shot using the green screen to put anything on it. They're just walking around a green screen set. Just like, it's just in their imagination. They're just actually insane.
There's a popular anime where people get stuck in a video game, and I would watch a version of that, but it's kids that never got out of the video game from Spy Kids 3, and they just grow up inside this video game and just lose their minds.
Isn't there just Jumanji?
Sure.
Yeah. You'll continue the franchise. It's Jumanji, the first film from 1995. So, all right, my idea, and like it seems obvious to do like spy babies or spy dogs or spy adults or
obviously
adult kids, as you suggested, Richard. But instead, I'd really like to extrapolate upon a typo I made when Googling the series earlier this week. And instead, I'm going to pitch you guys Soy Kids. Which follows.
So one thing you might not know about us is I'm vegetarian and Charlie's vegan, so we're already very invested.
You'll love this. So it follows the lives of like these, you know, pathetic participation trophy winning children who are being raised by coddling millennial parents.
And just like you guys.
Yeah, taught not to be.
It's literally us.
Yeah, and they're taught to be in tune with their emotions and other stupid, unnecessary things like that. And in the film, the Soy Kids must gather up all their courage when their parents are kidnapped by a dastardly cartoonized version of a famous alt-right YouTube vlogger.
that always folds his arms when he thinks he makes a real good point.
Yeah. Yeah. When you guys told me that you're vegan and stuff, and I was like, all right, I got to put on a voice for the next sentence so it sounds like, so it's clear that I'm not someone who would be derogatory retort. Because I was like, you were like, we're vegan. And I was like, all right, cool. And then the next word was pathetic. And if you go back and listen, you'll hear my voice change completely.
You see, we're not actually capable of putting on voices because our diets don't give us enough nutrients to have that sort of flexibility with our vocal cords.
Yeah.
It really stifled my acting career, which is a shame.
Although, speaking of which, this is something we haven't done in a long time, AJ.
Yeah, I was thinking this, yeah.
Yeah, but we went through a phase for our first year or so of our podcast, but whenever we got like a foreign guest on, seeing if you guys can do a Kiwi accent. Kiwi being New Zealand.
I'm really bad at accents.
Me too.
Say Spy Kids is my favorite movie in a Kiwi accent.
Oh god! Okay. Charlie, do you want to go first while I'll think about this?
Oh, fuck. Can you say it one more time so I can really listen?
Spy Kids is my favorite movie.
Spy Kids is my favorite movie.
Spy Kids is my favorite movie.
That's not bad, not bad.
Spy Kids is my favorite movie.
These are great guys. I'm very touched. But hey, that brings
us. You guys do a British accent.
Oh, Spy Kids is my favourite movie, isn't it?
Spy Kids is my favourite movie!
Spy Kids is my favourite movie.
Do like...
Go posher. You're doing the less posh voices. I want to hear you go posh, Richard.
Spy Kids is positively ghastly. Is that it?
Spy Kids is my favourite movie.
Very good. Very good. Very good indeed.
So, all right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. But before we clock off, so as I said before, next fortnight we're going to be doing the Machete series. So stay tuned for that. But once again, Charlie and Carlisle, do you guys want to just go over the various podcasts you do and where you can find these various podcasts?
Can I really quickly talk about why the OSS is the worst spy organization in film history?
Look, I'm sorry. We're out of time. You can't. No, you can do it. But you have to incorporate your podcasts into this.
Okay. That's fine. So, much like our podcast, A Podcast for Everyone, all our buildings are made out of the letters that make up the podcast name. So our podcast HQ is made up of the letters in A Podcast for Everyone. Much like everything in the OSS buildings, including the OSS buildings, is made up of the letters OSS, meaning everyone knows where they are.
Yeah. And also, everyone knows where your podcast is, because they can just look up A Podcast for Everyone.
Yeah, it's
also,
the opposite.
We have a very patriarchal podcast, as we are both men and we are yet to have a female guest.
Really?
And also, for some reason...
No, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. The OSS, for some reason, Junie is Spy of the Month, and then Gary becomes Spy of the Month, when clearly Carmen is the best spy.
Oh, yeah.
Patriarchal. Yeah. Horrible.
Wow.
Terrible.
Much like me and Carlisle constantly tell people we're from A Podcast for Everyone, every spy tells the people as soon as they meet them that they're an agent of the OSS and that they're a secret agent. Also like me and Carlisle, all our podcast enemies are former employees of the podcast that we have dealt with very bad HR, which means that they've turned against us.
Wow.
So if you couldn't glean from that what our podcast is about, let me just do that for you now.
I made it work. I was given a task and I did it.
I applaud you're having a go at it. So A Podcast for Everyone is... not a promise of vague content, but is actually a very specific reference to the second album of British pop rock band Busted, who are famed for their sort of very silly lyrics. So me and Charlie, we analyze the lyrics, we review the music, and we also try to weave every song into one overarching narrative, which at this point in time has gotten to become just absolutely nuts.
And what's the narrative called?
It's called the Busted Theory, because we believe that it's absolutely intentionally what was intended. I believe you came up with the name.
Our worst guest ever, Richard. Came
up. Our worst guest ever, Richard. Richard has been on the show a couple times. He will absolutely be back on. So those are some good episodes. Sweet. You can check out.
Are you guys going to have AJ on?
Would you like to come on? You can absolutely come on, absolutely. AJ, if you want to come on Podcast for Everyone, talk about Busted. What's your favorite Busted song, AJ?
What I Go to School
Give
for?
Me your top 10.
I know What I Go to School For. I know Year 3000, and I know the one that Richard kept playing.
On What You're On.
On What You're On. Yeah, I know those things. Okay.
Well, we're currently going on to the Mook Busted album, so you need to pick your favorite Mook Busted song.
I would love AJ to come on and do one of the really fucking stupid, weird Mook Busted songs, but not listen to the song.
You can come on and do Riding On My Bike then. Or How's My Hair?
It's you're speaking absolute nonsense to me.
Charlie has a great show called Why Did I Do That as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to talk about that as well? And then I'll talk about
it. I was throwing it to you. Oh, okay, I'll do that.
Let's do that.
Let's do that because we're like friends.
Yeah.
So Charlie's great show called Why Did I Do That, where people come on and they tell their embarrassing stories and they can have a laugh at themselves. And you can have a laugh at them. You can point your finger at the freak and laugh at them. And he's also on a show called Rank List of Everything, which is exactly what it sounds like. He and our friend Harry get together and they try to rank everything, and it's very funny.
You guys have the most insane podcast concepts. That's crazy.
Get ready for Carlisle. So Carlisle has a podcast called Dungeons and Dragons, where him and his friends pitch Dungeons and Dragons concepts without ever listening to it. For example, one of them was a spell which sung what was the darkness song? I Believe in a Thing Called Love, which made people have like a heart attack because they were filled with rock and they couldn't move after that. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that's something we did.
He also has a podcast called Content Presumably, where he picks some dumb stuff to do and then we do it. For example, reading Sonic fan fiction.
Yeah, there are three separate reading Sonic fan fiction episodes, so you can go check those
you
out.
Should
or
do
have
the
quiz where you have to guess the Pokemon description to the Pokemon when one of the guests knows nothing about Pokemon.
I'd love to see, you should do like a series where you read that Super Smash Bros. Fan fiction. The which is the longest piece of fiction ever written. Not just fan fiction, the longest, like the longest thing ever written.
Any fiction ever.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
There's a lot of characters that you gotta get through.
Clearly they've never read the climax scenes from the Spy Kids movies.
I can imagine all the sexual jokes from Super Smash Bros. That's a fan fiction. Just Mario and Luigi smashing babes left, right, and center. Oh, yeah.
We will leave.
For 9,000 pages.
Fun fact for anyone wondering. The Substance Emissary's World's Conquest, it's a work in progress. And as of July this year, it's 3.5 million words long. And it's the longest piece of literature ever written.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Why?
Well, hey, right. Look, we'll leave.
And you guys think I have a lot of time.
Wait, sorry. The article I was reading is from 2013. It's currently like almost 8 million words.
Jesus.
We will leave links to everything we've just talked about, including your podcasts and that fan fiction in the show notes below. And also, you know, if you've listened this far and you like Cold Popshire, go and give us a like on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube, all the social medias you can think of, just look up Cold Popshire and follow us on there, or you can email us at coldpopshiremedia@gmail.com. And before we clock off, I do just want to give a shout out to our listeners, Jensen and Chelsea Shearer. I think that's how you say their last name. They played from home this week and watched the franchise with us this fortnight. Mm. So
yeah, that's real cool. Yeah, Jensen's a good boy. He a couple months ago
is he also
made
a talking dog.
a few months ago made a homebrew. Or like a craft beer that he dedicated to us.
It was like kiwi fruit flavored.
Yeah, crazy kiwi or something like that. And Jensen, if you're out there and you still have some or you are making more, get in contact with us and I'll pay shipping for you to send us some, because I would love to try it.
Yeah, me too. Cool. Well, so thank you for coming on the show, guys, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for the Machete series.
Thank you for having us.
I want to quickly mention,
I had a lovely time.
I can't believe this didn't come up, but Joel McHale is in the fourth film.
We could do a whole nother 15 minutes on the actors that show up in these films.
Well, I've got a type 5 on Joel McHale.
I was still quite charmed by him.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway.
One of my notes that I wrote down is I wish that his character was my husband, because he's the one he's loved.
Oh, his job in the movie is that he's a spy hunter, which is just a reversed engineer. Like, we're going to make a movie about spies. What's the easiest way to make conflict between the husband and wife? He's a spy. What the fuck is a spy hunter? Why are you hunting spies?
Surely that just makes you a rival spy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this Spy Kids-esque post-credits scene, which came immediately after the goodbye.
No, just leave 30 seconds of silence at the end for that authentic post-credits.
I will. It starts right now.